Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. We humans are visual creatures. You know, the whole a picture is worth a thousand words thing. Well, for decades, public perceptions of sharks have been shaped by images of menacing, man-eating monsters. Brian Scarry wants to change that. He's an award-winning underwater photographer who's been working with National Geographic magazine for almost 20 years, and he's explorer in residence at New England Aquarium. He has a new book out called Shark, which is a collection of his photos paired with stories written by colleagues at National Geographic. Brian, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Heather. Thanks.
Can you describe your own personal first face-to-face experience with a shark?
I can. My first experience face-to-face with a shark occurred in New England waters. I was maybe 20 or 30 miles off the coast of Rhode Island back in 1982. I was 20 years old at the time and had been invited out to sea sharks by somebody who became a great friend of mine, Wes Pratt. He was a shark biologist, and I had met him at an event that we were both lecturing at and learned that he had built his own shark cage and was going out with colleagues every summer to see sharks. And I didn't even know that was possible in New England, but was very interested in doing it. So he took me out, and I can remember being in that cage for hours that day, sort of staring out in the gloomy water there and bouncing around, almost getting seasick and not seeing anything. But late in the day, maybe about 4 p.m., this beautiful blue shark sort of just materialized out of that green water. And I remember being so sort of enamored with her that I actually opened the shark cage door, swam out. I was told later that I was the first person that they ever had do that. But I just wanted to get close to this beautiful female shark. And, you know, I write about this in my new book, that it was sort of this interaction where it seemed as though she was acknowledging me, but, you know, not really paying me much mind. She was on this ancient journey of which I was no part. And, you know, we interacted for a few moments as she passed by, and then she sort of just swam back towards the boat and disappeared into the shadows, and I didn't see her again, and I was left sort of drifting in the ocean there, wondering if it had been a dream or if it was indeed real. So pretty extraordinary and a profound experience for me.
I mean, you've continued to photograph sharks for about three decades now. What is it about sharks in particular that appeals to you?
You know, I would say that as a photographer, sharks for me represent this perfect subject. They sort of blend grace and power beautifully. You know, they move elegantly through the water, but yet they seem to always exude this great confidence. They're sculpted by evolution to have this great form. You know, it's very symmetrical, the pectoral fins, the dorsal fin, the tail. You know, so it's been a lifelong quest over those decades to try to achieve that perfect shark photo. And there's also been a bit of an evolution in my career. In the beginning, I just wanted to photograph these wonderful predators, and because they were great subjects. But I've come to see sharks as a fragile species, as a vulnerable species that really needs a bit of a makeover. So a lot of my work these days is about trying to dispel myths and show them as a very important part of the ocean.
You say in the book that you think it's really important to portray and show sharks as part of their environment. So you spend a lot of time kind of before you're even taking pictures of the sharks, looking at the environment and watching the sharks interact with their environment. I have to say, I was kind of intrigued because I think of a lot of their environment as just being water. So what kind of interactions are you looking for, and why do you think that context is so important?
I think that, you know, if I'm going to be successful in sort of changing perceptions or some perceptions about sharks, I need to give them context. I need to show, first of all, that a shark is not a shark is not a shark, that there are many species. There's almost 500 species of sharks in the world, that they all have, you know, varying degrees of different biologies and morphologies. They are really, you know, amazing epitome of evolution in many respects. They haven't changed in millions of years. But in order to do that, I have to show that they're different. So if I'm photographing a tiger shark in the Bahamas or in South Africa, I want to be able to show the place that it that it spends a lot of time. It might be a coral reef, or, you know, it could be the blue waters near Mozambique or South Africa, adorned with remoras. But that's a very different setting than a great white shark in Cape Cod. That's a whole different ecosystem. So to the degree that you can do it with photography, if the visibility is good enough, or if you have bits and pieces of the environment, whether it's a fjord in New Zealand or, you know, a sort of a temperate forest in New Zealand or someplace like that, I do want to show some of that habitat that the shark lives in, to give some context, to give some personality to their lives and bring readers or viewers into that world. Sometimes it is just, you know, the water column. Sometimes it's just blue water or green water. But if you can get more than one animal, or you can show other, you know, little jellyfish in the water, anything, it might give a little bit more depth to that scene.
Obviously, when you're taking those photos, you're underwater. That comes with a whole host of challenges. You've got limited time on scuba. You've got limited battery life. You know, you can't just pop a lens off your camera and change that to a new one when you're underwater. So what's your strategy when you're, you know, going to get in the water? What are you going in there? What's the plan to actually get the shots that you want?
Yeah, that's such an important point that, you know, my work, even though it's wildlife photography, as an underwater photographer, it is quite different than my terrestrial counterparts. All the things you mentioned are true. My cameras have to go inside housings, and I can't change film or compact flash cards or lenses, and I'm relegated to the air on my back, and I also can't sit in a camouflage blind and use a 600-millimeter lens and wait for a month for some elusive animal to wander by. I have to get very close and do it in, you know, maybe an hour.
And how close do you have to get? I mean, you see these photographs of lions on the African savannah and have to realize, oh, they're not 6 feet away from that lion. They're, you know, dozens of feet away. How close are you getting to these sharks, though?
Well, you have to essentially have that shark right in front of your camera. I mean, almost have its nose on your dome port, you know, the part that you shoot through with the lens on the camera housing. Because the ocean, even in the clearest of waters, the ocean acts like a giant filter. It scatters light, it refracts it, reflects it, and it takes all the color away. And if you were trying to shoot over even more than 10 feet in even clear water, the images just wouldn't be compelling. They wouldn't have any real interest. So you need to get super close. I use wide-angle lenses to eliminate the amount of water between me and my subject. And I often, you know, fill the ambient light with a little bit of flash as well. I bring these two strobes down on my camera housing, and I sort of mix the light. I'm metering for ambient light, and then I'm popping just a little fill flash to add color and detail and bring back those true colors to the animal. So my plan, to answer your first question, is, you know, to obviously do a lot of research. I'm typically working with researchers and learning as much as I can about the animal, about the right time to be there, you know, what tides maybe I need to be working. Do they only come around in high tide or low tide? You know, what might they be doing, what their behavior might be like? And then, you know, trying to spend as much time over whatever period I have in a place, a couple of weeks or a month or whatever, to get as much time, as many hours in front of that animal and as close to it as possible. And of course, you know, with sharks, it isn't without risk. I mean, I think this can be done very safely. I've been doing it for decades, and it's all been very safe. But I also have to recognize that these are potentially dangerous animals, and, you know, I have to take those kinds of precautions as well. So my plan might include having an assistant come in the water with me to sort of watch my back, or maybe with some species I wear a chainmail suit, you know, that gives me protection if the shark gets a little too frisky, or maybe even a cage with great white sharks. So there's different ways of working depending on the species or where in the world I might be.
You've got a few photos in the book that are white sharks right off Cape Cod here, but not many are Cape Cod shots. And I understand it's particularly challenging to get a great shot of a shark around here. I mean, in part, the water is not bright, clear blue, but also getting close enough can be hard. And we have a clip from a National Geographic video where you describe having to get the right size of seal decoy, drag it through the water, what you have to go through to actually attract a shark. Let's listen to that.
After many attempts at decoys and all these different things that I was trying,
He's coming. Have a boat behind it.
Nothing was working, and then finally, when this right-sized decoy...
Whoa, dorsal's out of water.
The right-sized housing inside and the wireless trigger and the video and all this kind of stuff came together, and I saw that shark just come right up to the tail of this thing, and I could see it.
Oh, he's a player.
Yeah, he is. He might bite it.
Come back! There you go!
Yeah!
There you
yes.
go!
Yes! Yes.
I mean, you just stared at that decoy for so long, and then all of a sudden, there's teeth and jaws just emerging from the water. I mean, I hope I got it. But I mean, I was shooting fast. It was right in the frame. I could see it. I actually saw the red of the gums, you know, with teeth. Unbelievable. I mean, the beach was right there in the background, desolate.
Couldn't be more than 12 feet of water. Let's go get the decoy and have
yeah,
a look.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
yeah.
You got to collect your data. I just got the picture. That's all I care about. Oh, man. Very cool. Very, very cool.
I love the excitement there in actually getting the shot. But I also got to wonder, I mean, you're saying you don't necessarily want to portray sharks as you know, these menacing beasts. But what you got there was a pretty classic Jaws moment.
Right. So and that's an excellent point. But I think, you know, what I'm trying to do as a wildlife photographer, as a journalist telling stories about sharks, is to portray them accurately. I think for, you know, a very long time, way before movies or even novels came out, sharks had been portrayed as villains, as demons. And that's not accurate. They are far more complex creatures. They lead complex lives. We don't fully understand them. They're largely enigmatic. We have a lot more research to do to really understand what's going on. But they're not house pets either. You know, they're not cocker spaniels. They absolutely are predators. And I think we need to see them as that. I think in the same way that we understand lions or grizzly bears are important predators, wolves to whatever ecosystem they live in, we have to see sharks that way too. So when I'm making pictures, I am trying to be as accurate as possible. And they do predate on seals. They do, great whites do. And they do eat other things. And I think we need to see that. So what I want readers to come away with is as complete a picture as possible. They need to see these animals in a true light. But if that's done correctly, they'll see that we can remove a lot of the fear that, you know, just because you put your toe in the ocean, it doesn't mean it's going to get bitten by a shark. These are usually quite elusive creatures. They're actually quite hard to get close to underwater. And although accidents happen and mistakes happen when people, you know, get injured by sharks, it doesn't mean that we have to have this, you know, primal fear necessarily about them. So with that component that I photographed for my story on great whites, for National Geographic about sharks on Cape Cod, you're right. These were animals that were very elusive. They have only really started to emerge in big numbers since 2009. The work of Greg Scomel has documented this. And it's unique in the animal kingdom. This would be analogous to a new pride of lions emerging in Africa, in the Serengeti perhaps. But that doesn't happen anywhere else in the world. So what's happening on Cape Cod is really unique. It's a great story, but photographically, it's a real challenge because these animals are singularly focused, it seems, on the seals. They don't want to come near a boat. At least that was our experience, both Greg's and mine. They are operating in shallow, murky water with currents. I can't put a cage in there. The water visibility is not very good. So all the traditional methods of making underwater pictures of sharks just didn't work. So it took me a long time to figure out how to do it. It was about a 5-month process over 2 seasons. And, you know, I'm trying to convince my editors back at National Geographic that we can do this. And there's a lot of anxiety with that. But ultimately, after several decoy designs, I paired up with a friend of mine, Tom Burns, a veterinarian on Cape Cod, who had been doing his own designs. And he was doing a predation study under Greg Scomel. And I found a way to put those cameras in those decoys and ultimately got that picture.
You also have photos in the book, one of a female tiger shark with 2 hooks embedded in the left side of her jaw. You've got photos of oceanic white-tip sharks, which actually are famous for attacking shipwrecked sailors in open water, but which are now very endangered and in danger of going extinct in the next few decades. And in fact, you know, you had trouble even finding sharks of that species to photograph. Do you think your photographs can change enough of the public perception to make people care about these predators that can be a menace to human beings and that we have hunted at this point in many cases close to extinction?
Well, I don't think that I have any illusions that people might ever feel the same way about a fish as they do some furry mammal that lives in the forest. So admittedly, it will be more difficult to change perceptions and to get people to embrace sharks, so to speak. But I do think that photography and good storytelling, along with good science, can absolutely move the dial in favor of conservation. I think that if more and more people come to see these animals as important, as vital to the health of the ocean, you know, I think that it's important to recognize that every other breath that a human being takes comes from the sea. More than 50% of the oxygen all of us breathe is generated by the ocean. And when you consider the role that predators play to keeping ecosystems healthy, whether it's wolves in Yellowstone or, you know, grizzly bears in Alaska, whatever, we begin to connect the dots and see that having sharks in the ocean is indeed important. It's actually, I believe, important to our own existence because we rely on the ocean. And right now, more than 100 million sharks are being killed every single year. That's been happening for decades. It's actually staggering to believe that's been sustainable. But, you know, we're dwindling these shark species at an alarming rate. And I think we do need to see them in a new way, and it's time for a new perception, a new ethic. And I do think that photography can help to that point. So, yeah, it's not going to be easy, but I certainly think we have to try.
Brian Scarry is an underwater photojournalist. His new book is Shark. Brian, thanks for talking with us.
Thanks so much, Heather.
And special thanks to Doug Sugarts and Gary Mott at WGBH for their help producing today's show. Until next week, this is Living Lab Radio. You can always find Living Lab Radio on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab is produced by Heather Goldstone and Elsa Partan. Mindy Todd is the executive producer. Major support for Living Lab comes from the Candida Fund.